CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. We are we're cold, but we're alive. Let me just check my pulse. Hang on. Yeah, I'm alive. I'm here. Sure. Well, June is definitely here to bite, and June is not messing around when it comes to temperatures. And I'm looking at it right now. What is the temperature where you are? Sia is in the studio. Leanne is in Johannesburg. I'm in Pretoria. What are we looking at? Let's have a look here. I'm at 6 degrees, according to this. 6 degrees. What are you looking at? Huh? Come on. Let's see who's coldest this morning.
I'll be the same as Sia.
Yeah?
Yeah. All right. I'm on 6 degrees.
Oh, my God. All right. We're all not good.
Why did we even bother? Because now having that in your brain.
Now it makes you colder. We're not in South Africa, we're not really geared for winter. We've spoken about this before. But you know, everywhere else in the world, like, winter's important because people fucking die outside. It's so cold, right? Here, it never really gets that freezing. And I know we're sitting complaining now about 6 degrees, but you know, we don't get like icy, like minus 10s and minus 20s. Like they do in other countries. They have to build their houses to handle that. And if your house or your flat or your apartment or your room, whatever it is not geared to winter, you're in big shit.
Yeah. I mean, our houses definitely have they're not the most eco-friendly, put it that way.
Definitely not. No. Definitely.
What makes things a little trickier here in studio is that we have to keep the equipment cool. So even though I come in and I switch the aircon off, there's still that,
that bite.
Weekend aircon chill.
Oh, you're making it worse.
I know. Weekend. I also instinctively was pulling at my top and trying to make it warmer.
So speaking of the weekend, any fun happen? Anybody do anything exciting or interesting, or you mostly just trying to stay warm?
I'm a Kazanti to my cousin's child, and it was his first birthday. And then combined with the in-law side of the family who have one-year-old twins as well. So it was basically a first birthday party for 3 one-year-olds. And we went to a bowling club and we were outside in the sun. It was packed with people and their dogs and no masks and just relaxing. And these are very, very serious bowlers. It was so good watching them. I mean, for a sport that mainly older people take part in, they have to communicate from a terribly long distance.
Yeah. I mean, they don't know what they're saying half the time. They're like, is it my turn yet, Cecil? No, Harold, it's not your turn yet. It'll be your turn.
They're all shouting from the sidelines, but you can see that the other side can't hear, but they don't care. They're just having fun. They're all in the same boat, all wearing their matching shirts. It was such a lovely day for, you know, especially given during this time. It was like just letting loose and relaxing. I mean, there was even a kid from another table. When I had my nephew on a swing, I said, Jack, we're going to sing happy birthday to you today. And the strange kid from the other table said, well, not strange, stranger, said, why? So I said, because it's Jack's birthday today. He said, oh, happy birthday, Jack. And promptly invited himself to the party for the entire afternoon.
Yeah, I like
this
that about
why
you.
I hate kids. No, you
like it. What? He was first in.
I think it's so sweet. Like kids just, they make friends. They're much better.
It's how it's supposed to be.
No, yeah. They're so forward and presumptuous and just leave me alone.
No, I love it. You know, yesterday I woke up and I was buggering around in the house and like moving things and tidying and like trying to find something to eat. And then my nephew arrived and, you know, he just walks into my house because they don't live far from me. And he's 5, 6 now. He just walks in. The older brother doesn't. But the younger one, he doesn't give a shit. He's like completely on his own mission. But he walks in with two of his friends who I've never met in my life before. And he's like, oh, yeah, this is my uncle's house. And then he just walks around and these other two friends of his walk around. And I'm like, can I get you guys anything? Is this something I can do for you?
Can I take your coat?
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm surprised they didn't go and, you know, change the TV to a channel that they wanted to watch. And like, they do whatever they want, you know. Kids are just, I love that about them. By the way, Leanne, when you were at the bowling club, did you find any potential husbands? You know,
the bowling club that I was at is very much separated into two areas. The one is for families and dogs and children and grands and grandparents. And then, you know, while I was having a smoke break with my cousin, we noticed this stretch tent. And I said, what's going on there? She said, I think that's where the adults go.
Oh.
And I said to her, should we go? Because we were both single. And we looked at each other and we looked at how far it was to walk and we went, nah.
Oh my God.
But there was definitely.
You've given up.
Well, we were just, it was just too much. But yeah, there was a bar there and all sorts of things. So I think there was definitely an adult section.
Hmm. Now, Leanne, your nephew is now officially one, which means in a couple of months he's going to be talking and whatnot. Are you super, super certain about this Kazanti title? Because once he starts speaking, it's going to stick.
No, so everyone refers to me as Auntie Lee. So it'll be Auntie Lee.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know what? The only reason why I say I'm a Kazanti is because my cousin has only one sibling, her sister, who was so excited to become an aunt. And, you can't take that title away from her.
No,
so that's why there was a Kazanti. It was for the adults, really.
He's a proper lockdown baby. I mean, he was born during lockdown last year, and it's been a whole year already. And there's something interesting here Tracy mentions. She says, I've noticed that the kids who were born in lockdown are a little petrified when there are too many people around.
Absolutely. And even little Jack had a moment where it was just too much. And, you know, we took him away to go and look at the trees and the plants just to refocus. Definitely, 100%. And I was thinking how kids don't think that people walking around with masks on is strange. You know,
it's
completely normal for them. They think that spraying your hands before you go into places is a normal thing.
Yeah, it's horrible. Those poor children. I kind of, you know, we assume that everybody's going to know what it was like before and that we'll be back to normal, you know, soon. But for those kids, they don't know
It'll be the abnormal. It'll be like, why aren't we wearing masks? Mustn't I wash my hands?
Well, Bulelo is continuing his COVID diaries. I want to play you one or two of those quickly. It's getting more and more hilarious. You know, he's complaining from the luxury of a middle class dwelling in Sandton, and he's making everybody laugh. So here he is. Listen.
I've got COVID, so I'm obviously better than everybody else. But I'm also doing fake middle class suffering. I'm actually fine. Everything's good. The underfloor heating's fine. But what's not fine is the fact that Woolworths delivery is 45 minutes late, which I ordered online. And you have to ask yourself, do Woolworths care that I have COVID, and are we all in it together?
Yeah, that's a very good point. And then he brought this one up. But you know, he's obviously fine, and everybody else is supposedly getting out of there. And when I say everybody else, I mean all the Cliff Central people, because we caught – you know, Cliff Central contagion, COVID. I think it started last Tuesday. And the Tuesday before.
Yeah.
So we've kind of been avoiding each other. And I did see Sia on Monday when we went to ENCA. And he and I seem to have completely stepped. I don't know how we managed not to get it. I didn't really contact with anyone.
Correction. After shooting at ENCA, you didn't just see me. You then barged in and scared the bejesus out of me during the week.
I think it was Thursday morning.
We call in the herd as a pop up. You got to pop up on your enemy when they least expect it.
Sia was sitting there doing work, and I like knocked on the window, and he thought, "Oh God, the murderer's here!" And he like looked up, and I could see how frightened I love him. Sorry, Sia.
But that's it. I'm gone now. But yes,
everybody else gets back to work tomorrow or Wednesday. When is it?
Yeah, sort of those two next days, because the lines are a little blurred with when this person's 10 days started and when this person started getting ill. And so we don't, you know, Gareth, we're almost at the finish line. Rather not tempt fate and ruin things, then we have to start the cycle all over again.
Now, if you've had it, that's as good as having a vaccination. So we're immune.
What do you
right?
mean? Okay, no.
You know what the worst part about being middle class and having COVID is? Is that I don't feel like enough people know I've got COVID. So I need people to know that my life can also be hard. And I know these groceries look like they're only like 5 meters away from my house, where they got dropped off by an online delivery person. But by COVID meters, it's a mile away.
He'll be on the show tomorrow. We'll hear from him.
Oh, good.
Did he actually end up showing any symptoms? Because he's a good, healthy chap.
No, he's fine. He's absolutely fine. Yeah. And so is everyone else. I mean, the only one who got it pretty bad was Jane, and she seems to be pulling through. So I'm sure that we'll all be back and up and running in no time. Well, hopefully.
Yeah, you know, I spoke to her a couple of days ago, and I don't know what the regulation is when you know you're positive and when you can go outside. But she said she was going so crazy being indoors that she woke up at the crack of dawn just so that there aren't any people around, just to go outside and take a walk. Now, she did say she put a mask on and whatnot, but she just wanted to be outside, because other than that, she's stuck indoors alone with two kids. That's enough to just drive you up the wall. And her man is currently away, so it's just been her and her kids, and no one able to help her. So she needed, you know, just to go outside for a little while.
Imagine how grumpy she is. I mean, Jane is like grumpy most of the time. So imagine how furious she is now that she's been isolated at home. She must be
Shane, what I noticed was she was clinging onto our phone call. I said goodbye probably three or four times. And I think for her, it was like, it's an adult human being, not these kids running around, because the conversation started dwindling down to nothingness. Like, yeah, so what do you think about DSTV channel 15? And I'm like, oh, Shane, I don't care now. can we wrap this up?
Well, I mean, I know that this is really hard for everybody, and we're having the toughest time of our lives, but 77 years ago, yesterday was D-Day, where, you know, some of our grandparents and some people's great-grandparents went and fought actual Nazis and landed in the icy waters of the Atlantic and started to be mowed down by German machine gun fire, and still managed to take the beachheads at Normandy. And I think that's something worth celebrating. 77 years ago, some real arduous difficulty. And the last time I think humanity was tested at that level. I mean, that generation they were stronger than even the strongest person in our generation thinks they are. Every one of them was stronger than anyone now. And I put something up about that yesterday, because it just, you know, it made me think. It made me think that it's not that long ago, first of all, because how many years was it? Hang on, I just want to see. Sorry, I just want to check here. I think our studio connection might have timed out. Hang on, we've got a problem here.
Hello, I'm just checking. We've got a problem. Hello.
Technical difficulties?
No, I don't know what's
happening. Yeah, our message is saying the app has crashed.
Sorry, sorting it out. Ah, looks like we're back and we're connected.
Okay.
All right, sorry. And we're back. You see, that's the kind of thing that happens, and you have to, if you're not monitoring it all the time, you don't even notice. So we're back on. I was just saying that 77 years ago doesn't seem like that long ago, you know. That's still in living memory for some people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's amazing how you could take things for granted 77 years. Peace, the fact that we aren't all having to go to war
All of these things are fairly big deals, but people don't think about them. And when I see, you know, the kind of stupid shit that we are sharing on social media, it makes me want to remind myself and other people of the priorities and kind of what really is important and how those things that happened that long ago, and for many people, it isn't that long ago, but those things are huge compared to this little bump in the road that we've gone through with COVID, which really is not a big deal. And it makes people just seem like we've become so weak. We've become so pathetic. We've become so whittled down in terms of courage, bravery, strength, fortitude, you know, the ability to actually get together and really fight something, like fight something that's worth fighting. Here we are like, oh, you know, the president of Nigeria's banned Twitter. And we've got to talk about that too, because I want to know what you think of it. I mean, obviously, I think it's great because I fucking hate Twitter. And I think Nigeria will be a much happier place without Twitter. So they basically censored the president of Nigeria. He tweeted something and it was fairly innocuous. It wasn't even like a big deal. And Twitter, with their rules, their community guidelines, they were obviously, you know, extending themselves beyond. And they thought, well, what's the president of Nigeria going to do? Well, he just basically shut Twitter down. He said there will be no Twitter. We're suspending them indefinitely in Nigeria. What do you think of that?
So by it being suspended indefinitely, so it does mean that it could still come back. And if it does, all those millions of accounts going to just pop back up, or are they gone?
No,
I mean, people take their following seriously.
The accounts are still there, but people can't access Twitter from Nigeria.
Okay.
So, I think in this country, if we didn't have Twitter, we'd probably be a lot better off. I don't think South Africa's like the things that get discussed and the things that come up on Twitter are not things that are helping to drive the country forward. You know, it used to be very much about, people sharing ideas and all of that. Now it's just a place where people go to bitch and moan. And if you think about the last 20 or 30 things that have become big subjects in South Africa for discussion that happened on Twitter, none of them have made the country better. There may be one or two of those fundraising efforts which have been really good, you know, to help someone in need or whatever. But those things are few and far between. And mostly it's just, you know, campaigns of ugly cancellation and nastiness.
Yeah. I absolutely agree.
I wonder if it would be better if South Africa did the same thing.
Well, I think we don't like being controlled. So there's a problem there. But I did pick up something as I get more and more into TikTok and I'm following the right accounts, The algorithms have learned what I'm looking for. And I'm finding really good, helpful stuff. I came across one TikTok by a professor in his 60s who said, you know, I've been tweeting for so long and I came onto TikTok just to try it and I cannot understand. All the intelligence in me cannot work out why it's such a good place if you look at it compared to Twitter. And for Facebook and Instagram, it's the same. You know, it's quite harsh and quite judgmental.
If you wait just long enough, you'll see that eventually the shitheads that are on Twitter will come to TikTok and then they'll ruin that as well.
Oh, Lord.
That's what's going to happen. Cool. It's just a question of those shit people who are now currently, that's their main place of residence online. That's where they spend most of their time, these shit people, on Twitter. Now, as soon as they realize like there's TikTok, and they've already started to go to Instagram and start to police other people's language and police other people's behavior and, you know, bring all their ugliness there. And it won't be long before they come to TikTok too. So enjoy it, Leanne. You're in the halcyon days of TikTok right now. Don't you agree? What do you think?
I'm not opposing, nor am I trying to come up with a solution here. But from my observation, it's not platform specific. It's not necessarily all resting on Jack Dorsey's shoulders. But this is all a reflection of our society. So Twitter now might not be the popular thing because of what it brings out of us. But, you know, the next platform will come about. And it's just about our state and society. And this is actually all holding up a mirror to ourselves. So we are the screwed up ones. We could go back to MySpace and we could screw that all up again. So we need to fix ourselves first before we go anywhere else or do anything else.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not saying Nigeria is some kind of virtuous country where all the good people are and the politicians make the right decisions. This guy's obviously just pissed off because his ego has been wounded. That his,
yeah,
what, how dare they switch him?
Yeah, sorry. What I marvel at is, and there's a reason why a term such as megalomania exists, because megalomania is a thing. But how do you, what a massive act of power to sit and go, today Twitter's going off. How do you even begin that? Is there one button? Do you think the union buildings in South Africa would be able to make that happen? How do you even begin to do that?
Well, I think, you know, that there are a couple of things that can happen. I mean, you know, there are servers that are hosted in South Africa and they can switch it off. I mean, there's a way around it. And just because Twitter's off in Nigeria doesn't mean everybody in Nigeria can't tweet. There are still some people who'll find roundabouts and they'll probably find more of them as we go on. But I don't think it's going to make that much of a difference, because for most people, if something isn't available, it isn't available. So they switch off, you know, all those URLs and then basically you can't access it. And most people aren't going to know how to get around that. So they're just going to go, okay, well, Twitter's off. I'll find something else to
enter. We'll go into something else. Exactly that.
I didn't know whether to believe this, but I saw some reports bubbling under alluding to the fact that now Nigerian authorities are looking for people who could still be tweeting and will prosecute them. And I thought, no. Well, that sounds a little far off.
Mm. Yeah, as Winsterian Pikachu says, with a VPN, you can get around it. You know, you can bypass the ban, which is cool. You see, this is the point with governments, is they always think they're smart, right? But they're so far behind. Like, you see, just last week we spoke to Sean Sanders about tax and cryptocurrencies. And he was saying, well, you know, that they're still trying to figure out exactly how they're going to tax this, what actually constitutes a tax event and blah, blah, blah. And the government trying to get their minds around how to do these things. Cause for them, that's about money, but we'll have to see. I mean, the South African government, they've tried with the SABC, you know, to make that the, you know, they wanted us to pay a license fee to the SABC, which would also be paid even if you only have Netflix or Amazon Prime. Just so we could keep them alive. And obviously people are just not going to do it. I mean, no one except Leanne Moll is paying e-tolls, for example.
And I've still got my TV license debit order annually.
You do?
Wow. So
you pay that as well.
I've just remembered, though, to be fair, that now that you brought it up, I mean, how often do you think about it? But I must actually check. I don't even know when it is.
Well, why are you checking? Can't
I'm very bad at these sort of admin things, guys.
Under a gantry at any.
What's that?
I can go under a gantry willy nilly, and it doesn't. I'm so not even blasé about it. Doesn't even make an impact on me anymore. But it wasn't up until a few weeks ago when I was driving a rented car. And that had an e-toll thingy, and it would beep every time I went under those. And I thought, oh, actually, these things are still around. And they'd like for all of us to still be paying for them. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No. There are people who do, and there are people who have those e-tags on, and then they actually go beep every time they go under them. I drove a rental car for a while, and that was what was happening. So whether or not – and they – I don't think they ever sent me a bill. Because they obviously just realized I wasn't going to pay it anyway. So Zunaid makes an interesting point before we move on to the headlines. Zunaid says, in spite of all the shitheads on Twitter, I have to give a shout out to Joburg Water and the custodians of that account. It is the easiest way to get updates and to escalate issues. So how's the water situation where you are, Leanne?
Much improved. I'm waiting with bated breath to see what the excuse might be this morning and if the pressure drops. But I had a good, long, hot shower on the weekend, which was just amazing. I really realized what I've been missing out on.
Well, because up to that shower, you've been magazin pumping.
But a trickle or going to someone else's house every now and then.
Someone spotted you in the street just washing like, under your armpits at the tap. Was that you?
Yeah, I was actually, I'd finished washing. I was now washing my bra and panties. with Omo powder.
Right, good. Yeah, we had Ben on again last week, which was nice. A lot of people have been sending us messages about that. So he will be joining us on Fridays. So that's quite cool. A couple of things before we get to the headlines. Winsterian Pikachu's back to say, I'm a bit past due on my TV license. I believe it is now 14 years, but to be fair, I don't watch TV. But you know what is funny is that they get more and more aggressive about the TV license payments because they hand it over to different companies who then chase the money, right? And they get more and more aggressive and they get more and more like rude. And then you've got to play with them. You got to like, I'm going to pay a promise. I've got the money. I'll do it next week. And then they go, oh, great. Cause most people just go, fuck you. I'm not going to pay. So you must string them along for as long as you can. Keep them busy for months and months. It takes a huge amount of effort, but it's really worthwhile. You'll entertain yourself and your family. You could put them on the speakerphone, have everybody join in. Oh, I've got two rand. I'll visit it again. Here's 25 cents. You know, you say, oh, well, we managed to raise 7 rand 50, but I don't know if it's enough. Really fucking
shame, Gareth. But I mean, think about it. None of the people who work at these debt collection companies wake up thinking, I want to be a debt collector. I want to go and chase people down for money and do one of the worst jobs in the world. That's not their fault. They're just doing their job. Shame, man. Shame on you.
don't take it out on them. I mean, they're going to be on the phone to you anyway. So you may as well make it entertaining for them. But remember that your enemy here is the SABC. So you must mess with them. You have to. In Italy, the TV license has been incorporated into the water and lights bill, so you can't get away from it. Oh, don't give them that idea.
No.
Steph said.
That's annoying.
Yeah, please. Yeah. And then Therence Cameron is saying, very, very embarrassing. We have only 25 likes so far this morning. So please, everybody, you need to. Leanne, please do it for us. 1, 2, 3, and go.
Welcome back to our channel. Thanks, guys. Thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe and hit that notifications button so that you don't miss out on any of my content. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, very good. That was
excellent. Right, yeah, I still don't get this blocking the camera hand movement thing. It's lost on me.
It's what some of the YouTubers do.
Okay.
Oh, dear.
Let's roll with it then.
All right, here are some headlines for you this morning. First from ENCA, Iqbal Sharma is back in court. Do you remember who Iqbal Sharma is? He's one of the Gupta associates. Sharma and the former Free State Agriculture and Rural Development head, Peter Tabete, are returning to the Bloemfontein Magistrates Court on Monday. They're among the 15 accused who face charges relating to the defrauding of the Free State Agriculture Department. A 25 million rand tender was irregularly awarded to a company owned and controlled by Sharma. And the accused appeared briefly in court on Thursday after their arrest a day before. They've been in custody since their arrest. So at least the wheels of justice are turning, even if they're turning slowly. And, you know, I was thinking about people like Anoj Singh, you know, who was there to preside over the collapse of Eskom and who was involved in all the Gupta's coal deals and mining deals and, you know, all the things that basically have caused all the shit when it comes to electricity supply and have been causing shit for years. And I thought that, well, that guy's probably living in a very comfortable house. He's probably in a neighborhood where they don't get load shedding because he would have known and he would have set it up so that they never get load shedding. And I wonder if he's paying any price yet. I wonder where Anoj Singh is. If anybody knows, do his kids go to the local school? You know, does he shop at the shops that you go to? And how is it that he is just chilling, having a great time? How is it that he, you know, goes home and has warm water to shower and bath in, that he has electricity to switch on his kettle? Like, I want to know how that guy's life is, because he's really one of the people who was at the center of all of that. So I hope they come after him at some point.
And, I've been way too obsessed with this Iqbal story over the weekend.
Oh, yeah?
Because what is it? The prosecuting...
NPA?
NPA, there we go. I read the NPA report and I thought it was so petty the way they cited Top Billing in it. You know, Iqbal really? And his wife, Tarina Patel, once invited Top Billing to their house.
Oh, nice.
And the house has been seized. And so in the report, they say, well, due to, I'm paraphrasing here, but it sounded like, well, due to their lavish segment on Top Billing as they showed off their house. And they made note of the fact that Tarina changed outfits 3 times.
Oh my word.
Changed her jewelry as well during the segment. All of that has been seized. And I thought, NPA, you didn't have to go that.
I love it. I love that. That I think people used to pay Top Billing to be on there. So they would have paid for that. You know, it's not because they're so interesting and people wanted to know about their lives. They're boring people. Anyway, the Rand has entered the week on a strong footing against the dollar. Local currency is at its highest level since February 2019 at just above 13 Rand 40 to the US dollar. That's really good. These gains came late on Friday when the dollar weakened after a worse than expected jobs report was released. The Rand has been making huge strides in recent months, thanks largely to higher prices for our mining commodities. A stronger Rand eases inflation and makes it more affordable for importers. So we'll keep an eye on that story as it develops. Then just quickly, Andrew Mlangeni, remember June, and of course it's Youth Month. President Kgalema Motlanthe, former President Kgalema Motlanthe, was speaking at the wreath-laying ceremony for Mlangeni on Sunday morning on what would have been his 96th birthday. And there are obviously commemorations around that too. But interesting that Kgalema Motlanthe was there. He's one of those people who he makes very few appearances and says very little, but when he does, it's usually for the right reasons. And then David Dushman, who is the last surviving Auschwitz liberator, died at the age of 98. He was a Red Army soldier who later became an international fencer. He died on Saturday in the Olympic Committee's statement, which was released on Sunday. And he was the last soldier who took part in the liberation of a Nazi death camp. And he died at the age of 98. We were just talking about anniversaries. Mm. 77th
anniversary. How's that for timing? Sure.
Yeah, 77th anniversary of the landings of Normandy, which was yesterday, and now the last soldier to liberate a concentration camp. Those people were really a different generation and a better generation than ours in every which way. I don't know. You could take any set of characteristics, and I'll guarantee you'll find them to have been a whole lot tougher, a whole lot more forthright and daring and courageous and strong. And U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris's plane was forced to land after takeoff on Sunday due to a technical problem on her way to Guatemala for her first international trip. I'm good. I'm good. How does she speak, Sia? How would she say, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm good. I'm good. This is an emergency, Joe. We're going to go down on this plane if you aren't careful.
And then she goes, she has that horrible laugh too. Anyway.
Oh my God, we're gonna go down to this plane.
She sounds like it's a whiny. Oh God, she's irritating. Anyway,
Air Force 2 is gonna force us down.
The crew noticed the landing gear was not storing as it should, which could lead to further mechanical issues. While there was no immediate safety issue, out of an abundance of caution, they returned to Air Force Base Andrews. A journalist on board reported an unusual noise from the landing gear when the plane known as Air Force 2 took off, but that the landing was completely normal. So Kamala Harris back on the ground, her first international trip cancelled.
Shame. What a way to start.
Yeah, this is an omen. Whoops.
Yeah, this Biden administration's doing great. As I mentioned just now, the Rand is looking good only because the dollar's looking crap. And, of course, the American economy, there's this brilliant picture. I think I shared it over the weekend of like a big pile of wood and it says, you know, what you could have got for $1,000 in terms of timber and lumber back during the Trump administration. Trump standing behind it with his arms folded, looking very full of himself. And then they show what you can buy with the same amount of money now in terms of timber and lumber. And there's Joe, like, sitting down on the ground, looking very depressed. And it's small. Mm-hmm. It's a small pile. So that's kind of what Americans are looking at now, going, I thought we were voting for a return to normal. I wonder how that's going. Clearly not as well as they thought. Now, Mondays mean that we get to spend some time with Dr. Hanan Bushkin. And this morning is no different. We're going to speak to him today. It is, and we've decided to give this a name. It's going to be okay, because people need to know that this is a, as I said earlier, a bump in the road, and we'll survive. Humanity's been through much tougher stuff than this. How are you doing this morning, though? We will check on your mental health and well-being by speaking to Dr. Hanan Bushkin, who is a renowned psychologist and the head of the Anxiety and Trauma Clinic in Johannesburg. Dr. Hanan, how are you?
Doing great. How are you guys?
Good. We get so much good feedback when you're on. I think people like the idea that on a Monday morning, we all get to come and lie down on your couch in your office and have our mental
free
health.
Free therapy. It's free therapy. You know, like,
right. It's like a dipstick test for all of us to check that we're okay. So there's so much cool stuff going on. Can I just go straight to an email and we address this, because I think this is something which you could probably help us out with. It's from Anonymous. Hi, Gareth. Thank you for bringing this awesome new segment to the show. After listening to Dr. Hanan this past Monday, I reevaluated my own personal journey and I feel far more positive about everything. I do, however, have a question. As I know, we're all going through our own personal stuff on a day-to-day basis. I've noticed some very self-destructive behavior in a close family member. What should one do if you notice signs of a major eating disorder in a close friend or family member? I've had the personal discussion with this person regarding their behavior, and I've tried to find out, and apparently they say it's been going on for years. They mentioned they've wanted help, but they have no idea where to go from here. I don't want to end up pushing this person away by sending a list of therapists or trying to hold them to account. Thank you again for the segment. I love the show and listen religiously. Please tell Dr. Hanan, I'd love his opinion on this, and I would like to remain anonymous. So, all right, where do we begin with this?
So let's just start like with the general idea of what do you do when someone is struggling with something? Well, create an environment and an approach that's kind to them, where they can actually feel comfortable, and they do feel comfortable opening up. Being vulnerable is so difficult, especially when you have to reveal something emotional that's considered as weakness within you. Nobody wants to open up to somebody that doesn't feel safe. So create an environment and an approach that's kind, that makes the other person feel safe approaching you, opening up to you. But also want to say, and we'll get to the eating disorder part in a second, that most of the times, just by making the other person feel that you're a safe place to fall, you're a safety net, they will probably come to you and approach you. You just got to pick up on the signs. Sometimes it's not as in your face as, hey, I have an issue, can we talk about it? Sometimes it's very subtle. Sometimes it's like, hey, I'm struggling with, she's my boss, is such an asshole. Or my colleagues are, trying to take over, take advantage. Or my wife, sure, she's being difficult. Or whatever it is, they will open up in subtle ways, and you've got to pick up on those subtle signs. And the moment you do, just create, as I said, an environment that's soft. But having said all of that, just remember that if you're not sure of what to do and how to handle it, leave it to the wise professionals to take over. You know, Gareth, if you come to me and you said to me, Hanan, my car's having an issue, can you come have a look? And I get to your car and it's just the petrol light that's on, then that's easy to fix. I know what that means. But suddenly when the engine is making a funny noise, the truth is if I tinker and start undoing the engine, I'm not a mechanic, I'm going to absolutely fuck it up. So the truth is that when it comes to human connections, it's most of the time you can kind of add support and add love and add kindness, which is wonderful. But don't tinker with something that you don't understand. And coming to eating disorder is a really, really complex issue. The basis of it is a lack of control. The person feels not in control of their internal world, which makes them want to take control of their external world. And you can add love and you can add maybe a consistent environment, but it doesn't fix their internal world. It might Right. give them that immediate gratification, that immediate relief, knowing that you're there, but it doesn't fix that internal issue in the long run. So it's like, I guess, going to them coming to you is like going to a drug addict and you give them that line of cocaine and they feel really good, but then that didn't fix the problem. So again, if you feel that it's within your wheelhouse, and being kind is within your wheelhouse, and being caring is Right. within your wheelhouse, and creating an environment that's a soft place to fall, go for it. But if it's within or outside of your comfort zone, leave it to the wise professionals to take over.
Yeah, that's such good advice. I think people think that they can solve everyone else's problems. They can't even solve their own in many situations. And I think it's interesting to take note of what you said before you started to explain the lack of control and the eating disorder thing. Is that people don't even know how to manifest this discomfort in their lives, or this issue, this change, this uncertainty, this difficulty they're going through. Most people are they just become moody, or they just become a little bit more erratic, or they become depressed and quiet. You don't really know until you ask them. And for some of us, like, I'm not the kind of guy who wants to be solving anyone else's psychological problems. I would rather just pass them on to someone who actually knows how to deal with these things. I mean, I'm not, there's never going to be a moment where you come to me for emotional help. I think all my friends and family know that. I'm not that guy. But I will be able to identify that something's not great. And then I can say to them, hey, you know what? There's someone you should be talking to. So,
but you know what, Gareth? You know what? I want to add to that. You raise a great point, which is to fix a problem doesn't mean making somebody feel better. So just because, and what I specifically mean by that, if somebody comes to you with an eating disorder, if you give them a big hug, it makes them feel better, no question.
Sure.
But it doesn't fix the problem. Absolutely. So just because you make somebody feel better doesn't mean you help them fix the underlying reason of why they're exhibiting the symptoms that they do. So just be careful of trying to make somebody feel better and assuming that you've helped them, which is wonderful. You should make people feel better. There's no question. But you should leave it to the professional to deal with the underlying issue that's causing these symptoms.
And sometimes the exact opposite of making them feel better is what is required to make them break out of that problem, right? So sometimes someone like you, who's the pro, you actually make them even more uncomfortable, and you force them to face up to some things that they're trying to avoid, which is not pleasant. They're not going to enjoy that experience. They're not going to come out of it going, oh, that was wonderful. Maybe right at the end, when you've actually solved some problems and opened up some areas of concern, then maybe
there's
they'll
no question.
Start. Yeah, but
there's
but
no that's question.
Massively important, right? Because without a little bit of difficulty, without a challenge, without some hard work, a lot of these problems, they don't go away. And to just plaster over it and make people feel better is not going to do any good.
So two things. Number one, change doesn't happen within your comfort zone. And if you want to change some patterns, they don't happen when you're comfortable. They happen when you're uncomfortable. And to go from point A to point B requires going through what we call cognitive dissonance. Cognitive dissonance happens when your brain goes, I'm not used to this. And it's literally a brand new environment, a brand new way of conducting myself in this world. To get to it, you got to go through it, which means you can't get, you know, people say to me, can I make the change? Without going through the cognitive dissonance, without making myself feel worse, not on planet Earth. It just doesn't work that way. In order to feel better by changing your pattern, you've got to get to the other side through some really tough struggles. The other thing that I want to mention is that some psychological disorders are so complex. And I've experienced this early on in my naive years where I saw a patient and I thought, I know how to deal with this. Meanwhile, I had no fucking clue. And what they do is they make you leave the therapy and you feel like a doormat because they've taken your energy away. They've taken your control away so they can feel better about themselves. And if you're not careful in terms of how to manage a complex psychological issue, you will leave feeling like you've been run over by a 10-ton truck while they're feeling amazing about themselves, and repeating the cycle will leave you
they suck you dry. Now, Sia, you were celebrating there where Hanan said to to get through some to what to get over something you to have to go through
it. Through it.
Yeah. So you were absolutely. You were celebrating. Is that like something that Oprah would say?
You have to have an Oprah moment so in any one of these, I guess.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dr. Khanan, for that Oprah moment. But you're so right. And as well, you know, one does have to manage their own emotions when trying to help people and trying to be the hero, because at the end of the day, you can't give what you don't have. And that I learned, I would say, a little too late according to my own timelines, but I'm glad I learned it nonetheless. It's like, actually, I need to manage myself first before I try to give anyone else anything.
Yeah, yeah. You know what, Sia? The thing is that you can't give what you don't have. That's also a little bit of an Oprah moment. We must have these Oprah sayings throughout. It's inspirational. But the truth is, though, even if you have that energy to give, you know, see, I can have all the energy I want, but if Gareth comes to me with his broken engine, doesn't matter what I've got, like, I cannot fix it. I cannot fix that engine if I don't know what I'm doing. So sure, self-love and self-care is incredible. It's very important, and you should set boundaries with people, because people will just take. You know, unconditional givers, oh, here's an Oprah moment. Unconditional givers attract unconditional takers. That's the truth. And if you don't set boundaries, you'll be running dry. But it's not just having the energy, but certainly having the knowledge of what you're dealing with, for sure.
I could see those people coming from a mile away. I shut the gates long before. no giving here unless it's absolutely someone I care about. I'm not going to do that for strangers.
Another one for Sia. And it's something my mom said recently. On someone who was taking advantage of their kindness. She said, don't mistake my kindness for stupidity. I wanted to say, I think I have quite a good example of, what might wrap this whole idea up from the email is, I had a family member who was struggling with addiction, and I certainly am not the perfect person to help someone through that. However, I took it upon myself within limits to help this person. And when they weren't open to receiving the help, and that was me taking them to a professional in the car, I had to pull away emotionally and say, if this person is not going to commit themselves, then there's nothing I can do. And it went even further to that, where I unfortunately found the person had in their apartment, and they were deceased. And, you know, it just was so important for me to make that distinction between, this is not because I didn't help or I couldn't help. This is because they didn't want the help. So you really do have to almost, you know, put yourself outside of the situation as much as possible, and really think about passing it on to somebody else to deal with, because you need to preserve yourself in that instance.
For sure. You know, Leanne, it happens a lot where somebody's asked us for help and we give them what we can, and then they go and hurt themselves to a lesser or a greater degree. And then we end up feeling guilty, or the person that didn't do enough in inverted commas feels guilty. It's important to do the best that you can possibly do. You know, the great analogy that I use that at least helps me manage my life is that we wake up every morning and we've got 100 units of energy, and use it as you wish. The moment those units are up, your body goes good night, and you go to bed and you wake up the next morning with another 100. The problem is when you run out of units of energy at 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and your body's not tired, but now you're running at a deficit, and then something has to give. Your mental health, your physical health, your resiliency, your ability to make choices and see opportunities. And you've got to be very stingy of where you spend those units of energy. I call them coins, where you spend those coins. You know, at the end of last year, I had somebody say to me, approach me and said to me, Khanan, you know, this COVID thing is a government made up hoax. They're trying to inject us with this and this and that and that. And my answer to this person was, cool. because I wasn't going to invest one unit of energy into that shitty conversation, because that unit of energy, I couldn't invest into my kids. Those 20 units of energy, I can't invest into my wife. Those 20 units of energy, I can't invest into my physical well-being. Those 20 units, I can't invest into my mental health. So you got to be very stingy. And that's what setting boundaries are, knowing what your limits are, not spending coins that you'd rather spend on something else. We think the great asset or the great commodity is time. Time means nothing when you've got no more units of energy. I can spend 2 hours with my kids with 0 units and achieve nothing. I can spend 3 hours with my wife with 0 units and achieve nothing. I can be at the gym for an hour with 0 units and achieve nothing. It's not the time that I have in the day. It's the energy that I have in spending and the quality that I put into those moments. So you've got to be very stingy with the coins.
Dr. Khanan, would the same principles you gave us apply in a case that isn't as extreme as what Leanne laid out? So for a lot of us in romantic relationships or with close friends or close family, as much as we understand mental well-being and how sometimes, you know, the professionals need to take care of it, there is also this level of, I am here as your partner and I should be able to take care of you and I am everything that you need. And the fact that I can't help you, you know, then I'm failing. And, you know, does that make sense? Where a lot of us want to be that person. We want to help. We want to make our partner's lives better. But, you know, we also have to accept that we can't be it all for them.
You know, I put a really cool Instagram. One of my great joys in the morning is good looking through memes. I get to see everything I need to see about the world while looking at memes. And one of the great memes that I put on Instagram was these two puzzle pieces. You must check it out. These two puzzle pieces, mom and dad, two puzzle pieces go to their son. Have you found someone yet? But the mom and dad are just a perfect two puzzle pieces and the son is a little bit like a mess up. It's a little bit complex. And when you see that, it's actually quite interesting because we think that we can be everything for someone. We just slot into them. And what we have to understand is that different people give us different nutrients. The tap cannot give me food, period. Period. The tap can give me water. That's it. And if I expect food from a tap, I'm going to be disappointed. So, and the great insecurity, it's a tap's fault. Exactly. Of course, it's a tap's fault. It's my wife's fault. It's my kid's fault. It's my colleague's fault. It's my boss's fault. It's the government's fault. The truth is we have to realize that we cannot get everything from a person. And it's our own insecurities, because what do you mean I can't be everything for you? What do you mean you have to go and see your friend? I've got to give you what your friends give you. I've got to give you what your psychologists give you. I've got to give you what your friends give you. And we got to understand that we are limited in our resource, and you got to get something different from different people.
Guys, I've got to call this to an end because we're out of time, and Dr. Flynn's got a busy day of seeing patients. But this is how we start Mondays, and you don't want to miss episodes of this going forward. It's going to be okay, is what we're calling it. And Dr. Khanan Bushkin is here to help us every Monday with this incredible new feature. He is, of course, a renowned psychologist. He is the head of the anxiety and trauma clinic in Johannesburg. And it's great to have you, Dr. Khanan. We want to talk about that savior complex that you were just about to get into there. Maybe next time.
We'll do it. No problem.
That's a whole other kettle of fish we've got to unpack.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
There's Dr. Khanan Bushkin. Isn't that cool?
Awesome.
I don't know why I feel like I turn into an old church lady every time he's on, but it's
there are people out there, like, Sia's got to start clapping and clicking and like raising his hand. That's what we're going to do. All right, well, when we come back, we've got a whole lot more for you, and a busy morning it is going to be on cliffcentral.com. We're going to speak to someone called Quibus Skultz, who's an avid collector in our what do we call it? Collector mania. There's collectivism. Collectivity, there's collectionitis. This morning we're going to do collectomania with Quibus, who is another interesting collector who I think will blow your mind this morning. There's so many bizarre and amazing things that you can collect. And it usually is bizarre and entertaining and weird people like me and Leanne and Sia who collect things as well. So we'll get to those in the next couple of minutes. Stick around, cliffcentral.com, Monday morning. And if you've got anything you want to add in, all you have to do is send us a message live on the YouTube stream. We get that straight up on the screen in front of us. You can also WhatsApp us, 079-748-2090.
CliffCentral.com.